This episode is brought to you by Dietz and Watson.
Molly, it's time we have the talk about hot dogs.
Okay. Well, hey, I'm looking for a hot dog that's the real deal, Matthew.
Like a classic hot dog that, like, when you think of, like, the platonic ideal of a hot dog, I recommend Dietz and Watson's Dietz dogs.
Ah, well, I've heard that they're handcrafted and made using only Dietz and Watson premium meat.
I can vouch for this because Dietz and Watson sent us a big box of hot dogs and other delights, and wife of the show, Lori, and I had them for dinner last night. We had the classic beef Dietz dogs with toasted buns with sauerkraut and pickled jalapenos and Dietz and Watson ballpark-style yellow mustard.
Do you think you'd recommend Dietz and Watson hot dogs for fried rice?
Oh, yeah. Fried rice with some sliced hot dogs. I'm going to be doing that soon. Wife of the show, Lori, is going to be making the hot dog flour buns from Christina Cho's cookbook, Mooncakes and Milk Bread. Very excited for this.
And I'm especially pleased because Dietz and Watson does things the right way. So this means, like, no additives, no fillers, no artificial flavors, no cutting corners. You can feel good about this stuff.
Dietz and Watson. It's a family thing since 1939.
Shop now at dietzandwatson.com/the right way.
That's Dietz, D-I-E-T-Z, and watson.com/the right way.
I'm Molly.
And I'm Matthew.
And this is Spilled Milk, the show where we cook something delicious sometimes, eat it all when we used to tape together, but not right now. And you can't have any unless you make some at your house, too.
Yeah, no, the you can't have any is truer than ever.
It's true.
We really leaned into that part of the slogan.
Yes.
Right. I have a bottle of Worcestershire sauce.
Matthew, I have one, too, and I have a big surprise to share about this.
Okay. Is it going to be a mystery that I have to solve?
When I pulled it out of the fridge, first I started thinking about, so this is a bottle of Lee and Perrins Worcestershire sauce.
And mine is too.
When I pulled it out, I started thinking about how sort of like old school the label is. Like, I think this label has been the same since I was a child.
Oh, yeah, for sure. And the bottle, we'll talk about this, but the bottle comes wrapped in paper, which is very luxurious.
So then I started thinking about, God, I don't remember buying this. Like, I wonder how long I've had it. And Matthew, so they've printed the expiration. I don't know if you can see. It's like printed over the one of the framing.
Yeah, I can't read it.
Okay.
I can see that it's there.
It took me a while to read it, too, because it's like over a line of copy. It says Best
Buy.
Oh,
this went over the line.
Are you ready?
I'm ready.
This is Best Buy 03-21-08.
Oh, that's amazing. Oh, I want you to taste it and see what happens.
No wonder I don't remember buying this. I bought it at least 13 years ago.
Yeah, you were a child when you bought that. What were you even thinking? What does a baby need with Worcestershire sauce?
I am 41 now.
I know.
I was no older than 28 when I bought this. Isn't this amazing?
Oh, man, that is wild. So mine, I bought this one recently because, like, we had had some, and I think, like, we threw it out in a purge at some point, but then we needed some more. And I think why did we decide to do this episode? Worcestershire sauce came up on the show last week for some reason. Anyway.
Last week we taped Chex Mix, and that often
Chex Mix, which is made with Worcestershire sauce. There we go. So this bottle expires May 26, 2021. Everyone, listeners, I'll put that on your calendar and send me an email on May 6, 2021 to tell me to immediately go out and purchase a new bottle of Worcestershire sauce.
And how much of it have you used?
If I actually get one of these emails, I'm going to be so happy. An oddly large amount, and I don't remember what we got this for. I mean, we couldn't have gotten it that long ago because it isn't expired yet.
I'm really excited to do this episode because I've used less than half of that bottle.
I remember what it's for. Oh, and so, like, this is the second Worcestershire we've bought recently because I bought the store brand trying to save money. I know I told this exact story last week, and it was not at all the same thing. Like, the ingredient list was completely different. The flavor was completely different. Just get the Lee and Perrins. We'll get into it.
We're going to learn so much in this episode. I'm excited.
Yeah, so I remembered what I've been using this for. It is Kenji Lopez Alt's homemade barbecue sauce. several tablespoons in it, I think, of Worcestershire sauce.
We should definitely share that recipe because I think June would be into it. I think my whole family would like it if I would do more things with barbecue sauce. I don't know.
Yeah, and this homemade barbecue sauce is really good.
Feel that it's like borderline un-American of me to do as little as I do with barbecue sauce.
Yeah, well, remember when we did the barbecue sauce episode, and like I think you really ended up enjoying the barbecue sauce a lot more than you expected.
Yeah,
which was really vindicating for me as the barbecue sauce person in the family.
Yeah, wait, are we a family now? Oh, that's right, we're married. Oh, but we're still not married.
We're still not married. There, Molly, families come in a lot of different forms. Maybe you haven't heard.
God, I should know. Okay.
Okay, so let's talk about Worcestershire sauce, shall we?
Wait, we haven't done memory lane.
Let's go down memory lane, shall we?
Okay.
Wait, do you mean that memory lane is going to be something completely separate from talking about Worcestershire sauce? Because I want to suggest that this being the Worcestershire sauce episode, that we go down memory lane and talk about our memories of Worcestershire sauce, not just general memory lane.
Oh, okay. Can I start?
You may.
Well, so one of my memories is that at some point, probably in 2007, I made something with Worcestershire sauce. And I bought a bottle of Worcestershire sauce. So that constitutes part of my memory lane.
Yeah, absolutely. That counts.
I remember this being something my parents always had in the fridge door. I think that my dad used to use it in hamburgers. Like, I think he used to mix it into the ground meat. Does that sound right?
Oh, absolutely. Yeah. We'll get to this, but it's an umami delivery system. That's why it exists.
I think that is probably why my parents had it. Maybe my mom also used it in meatloaf.
Yes. It is definitely a classic meatloaf addition.
Yeah. So I think of it as showing up wherever ground meat can be found.
I bet. I don't have any Worcestershire sauce memory lane, by the way. My memory lane is a week ago. We taped an episode and started talking about Worcestershire sauce, and we were like, let's do a Worcestershire sauce episode.
Do you remember your parents having it, though? Was this something that was always in the fridge?
And I think this is maybe like the most interesting condiment that is widely found in American pantries.
Oh, now that you mention it, I'm willing to buy that in part because it's sort of this like mystery bottle. Like,
yeah,
nobody really knows what's going on in there. Nobody ever goes in and nobody ever comes out.
No, but during this episode, we're going to take you on an incredible journey inside a Worcestershire sauce bottle. Everyone's going to get really tiny.
It's going to be like Magic School Bus.
It's going to be like Magic School Bus or Inner Space or Incredible Journey. Fantastic Voyage.
Okay.
We've made this mistake before. Incredible Journey is a movie where like some animals cross America to get back to their owners or something. And Fantastic Voyage is something where people get small and go inside a human.
Well, I'll be Ms. Frizzle.
And I will be Dennis Quaid. People have been writing Mrs. Frizzle, Dennis Quaid erotic fan fiction for so long. And now we're going to act it out.
Dennis, is that the throttle of the Magic School Bus? Or what do I do with this stick? No, Miss Frizzle knows how to operate the Magic School Bus. What am I thinking?
Of course, yeah.
What would Dennis Quaid say?
This isn't like a speed situation where, you know, Sandra Bullock suddenly knows how to drive a bus. And Keanu Reeves is like helping her drive the bus, even though he knows no more about bus driving than she does.
No, I would like to take back what I would just like to take back my Miss Frizzle impersonation because Miss Frizzle is a total super person who definitely knows how to drive that bus, if you know what I mean.
That's true. I definitely know what you mean. And the
the bus, I mean, is the bus Magic is, School Bus.
Yes, which is found in Dennis Quaid's pants. Okay. So what is Worcestershire sauce and where did it come from? I feel like every time you do research for the show, you get the full story. Like, you know, probably because you've solved so many mysteries in your life, you really know how to dive in and bring back the goods. Whereas every time I try and do research for the show, I come up with like, well, I learned some things and like raised more questions than I was able to answer.
I feel like that's exactly what I do too. So once again, we're married, we're not married, and we're the same person and we're not the same person. So go on.
But we are a family and we are Dennis Quaid and Mrs. Frizzle. And this is our curtain call. Okay, so let's start with Lee and Perrins, it's a brand synonymous with Worcestershire sauce in the same way that Heinz is synonymous with ketchup, I feel like. You know, there are other brands we'll get into, like Worcestershire sauce refers to a wide variety of different things now. But if you get something other than Heinz ketchup, people are going to be like, really? If you're like me and you try and save $2 by buying the store brand of Worcestershire sauce, you're going to get home and be like, why? Mm-hmm. So Lee and Perrins did not necessarily invent this kind of sauce, although they may have. But they popularized the term Worcestershire sauce. They may have coined the term. And according to the Lee and Perrins corporate history, Lee and Perrins first launched in Worcester back in 1837, I'm reading from the website, when local chemists John Wheely Lee and William Henry Perrins, which are great names, concocted a new condiment which after 18 months they found had matured into a delicious sauce. So delicious, in fact, that they decided to put it on sale.
Mm.
So when they say chemists, I think we're talking about like pharmacists.
Do you think that they did this on purpose?
I'm glad you asked, because
if they were chemists, this seems a little bit like outside their usual daily routine. And but to I wait think, 18 months for it?
Yeah, I think this dates to a time when like a pharmacist, a cook, and a doctor, and a pastry chef were all kind of the same thing. And you could just kind of float between those professions and no one thought it was weird. Whereas now, like, if my doctor brings me a milkshake, I'm like, should I drink this?
Mm-hmm.
And I mean, of course, I'm going to drink the milkshake. So there is an apocryphal origin. There are actually multiple apocryphal origin stories for Worcestershire sauce. The best known one is that, like, they mixed up this sauce, they tasted it, and they were like, "Ew, this is gross. Let's leave it in our basement for 18 months. And then 18 months later, they had forgotten about it. They were puttering around in the basement looking for Erlenmeyer flasks or something and found this sauce and were like, oh, let's taste this old sauce that was bad the last time we tasted it. And then by then, it had fermented and matured into a delicious, you know, mellow, well-harmonized sauce. I don't think this story is true.
To be clear, I can think of plenty of people, not going to name any names, who would definitely mix up a batch of something, taste it, decide it's terrible, and leave it in their basement for 18 months. I can definitely think of a lot of people who would do that.
Yeah, where I can definitely think of one person that you're thinking of.
Where this story gets really tricky for me is that they tasted it again.
Right. But I, you know, I think these were sauce, you know, mad sauce scientists. Mm-hmm. I think I don't think this was just a thing that happened accidentally. Like, you know, this is our first time making sauce. Whoopsie.
What do you think they were aiming for when they made this? Like, what do you think they were trying to do?
Okay, so I think they were trying to make a tasty sauce, and I think I understand like where the components of the sauce came from. And the idea of like, yes, you.
So I want to know like why it's this particular sauce. Because for instance, like there's so many other tasty sauces like Bernaise sauce. Or,
well, I think Bernaise sauce
bechamel,
is harder to, I think, or both of those are much harder to bottle.
Or mayonnaise. Like why this sauce? What did they want to do with this sauce?
So I think the idea of long fermented sauces was well known already. So the idea of leaving a sauce to ferment in order to improve the flavor and keeping qualities was not a wild idea at the time.
Okay.
In particular, so like soy sauce was well known. That's a fermented sauce. And there are fish sauces going back to ancient Roman times.
Yeah.
And Worcestershire sauce is a fish sauce. Like the main umami component of Worcestershire
is anchovies.
And also soy sauce, which has like now been replaced with hydrolyzed vegetable protein, but a source of MSG. So there is clearly some relationship between old school European fish sauces and Worcestershire sauce. As far as I've been able to tell, doing minimal research, fish sauces, which are very similar to Southeast Asian fish sauces, were popular in Europe from like ancient Rome to like the 16th century, then kind of declined in popularity and then sort of reappeared in the form of Worcestershire sauce.
Interesting.
Yeah.
That's really interesting. Huh.
Yeah. So the other component of Worcestershire sauce, like there's a bunch of things in there. Like let's just look at the ingredient list here. Distilled white vinegar. This is the American version, which is slightly different from the English version. Distilled white vinegar, molasses, sugar, water, salt, onions, anchovies, garlic cloves, tamarind extract, natural flavorings, chili pepper extract. So tamarind extract, I think, clearly came from India.
I was going to say that this is like a real spice root in a bottle. Spice route.
Yes, it totally is. And in fact,
there's so much stuff in here that would have never been found among the native plants of England.
Right. So there is, like I said, a second apocryphal origin story for Worcestershire sauce, which is that a British aristocrat returned from India and like went to his local chemist, Leon Perrins, and said, "Can you recreate my favorite chutney that I ate with fish?" And they were like, "Well, I mean, maybe it was tamarind and maybe there were some anchovies in there. And I don't know, let's put this in the basement and see what happens." Also, definitely not true. But tamarind chutney would have been already known in England, and there is clearly some sort of lineage there.
Wow. All right. This is interesting.
So this is a very like, cross-cultural sauce.
This is a sauce that is the child of colonialism?
Yes, it is. Yeah. And like I said, there was soy sauce in there too. So it was really a matter of like, these guys were like, here are some like tasty, intensely flavored things that we know about. Let's mix them all together and see if it's good. Let's try fermenting it and see if it's better. I think that's the whole story.
I love this. I'm getting this now. I understand what's happening. And Matthew, if you were going to take a whole bunch of flavors that you liked and put them together and then ferment them for 18 months in your basement, what would they be?
Oh, that is such a good question. Okay. So peanut butter, first of all, lime juice. What was I saying? Jalapeno, like pureed jalapenos.
Okay.
Sour Patch, like the the powder that falls off of Sour Patch Kids. I don't want like actual chunks of Sour Patch Kids, but like that citric acid powder.
Okay.
And some sort of brown sugar.
Wow,
and
this is essence of Matthew's palate.
Yeah. What else do I like? I don't know. Like red pepper flakes.
Oh, I like the sound of this.
I don't think fermented peanut butter is probably a good idea. I don't know. And I feel like they would have heard of it.
I'm trying to imagine the collision of peanut butter and citric acid powder.
Yeah.
And that just seems pretty iffy. But hypothetically, when I think about all these flavors in my mind's mouth, it sounds pretty nice.
Sounds pretty good, right?
I'm into it.
How about you? What's your Worcestershire sauce?
Oh, God. Okay. So this is really tricky because while I think I am more condiment friendly than you are, like you are still a bit of a condiment phobe, if I may put the words in your mouth.
Oh, yeah. Or are you just going to say cranch?
No. Wait, what is cranch?
It's ketchup and ranch. We did an ad for it once.
Yeah, no, I don't want that. I still struggle to think about, like, I'm still not a real condiment person, and it's hard for me to think about bringing together flavors with the purpose of putting it on something else. Do you know what I mean?
I sort of know what you mean, except that is a thing I do all the time.
That's true. That's like, actually how we cook,
I guess. I mean,
that's what
I don't know about
is.
You, Molly, but the way I cook is I like to take different ingredients and put them together
and then eat them
as if they were one thing.
Yes. Oh, wow. I'm learning so much with this episode.
Sometimes I take a noodle and I combine it with a tomato and you won't believe what happens next.
Wow. Have you ever tried when you have your tomato noodles?
Tomato noodles,
we call those. Yeah. Mm-hmm. Have you ever tried taking some ground beef, shaping it into spheres?
And
putting it in with your tomato noodles?
I have heard of beef spheres.
I've been wanting to try them. I just made this up.
Wow. Okay. The origin story of beef spheres happens right here. And no other ingredients, right? No like salt or seasonings or any kind. Just literally a sphere of beef.
And you just put it raw in with your tomato noodles. This is cooking.
And by the way, my tomato noodles, like, there's no cooking involved. It's just like a whole tomato with like a penne sticking out of it.
And then you impale the beef sphere on top of the penne.
Oh, yes. Oh, and it looks like a little snowman, only the body is a tomato and the head is beef.
And that's what we call cooking.
That's what we call cooking.
Hmm. Mom deserves the best, and there's no better place to shop for Mother's Day than Whole Foods Market. They're your destination for unbeatable savings, from premium gifts to show-stopping flowers and irresistible desserts. Start by saving 33% with Prime on all body care and candles. Then get a 15-stem bunch of tulips for just $9.99 each with Prime. Round out Mom's menu with festive rosé, irresistible berry chantilly cake, and more special treats. Come celebrate Mother's Day at Whole Foods Market.
This episode is brought to you by Masterclass.
Matthew, this weekend I took a class from somebody who I bet you admire as much as I do.
Okay, let me see it. Let me see if I can guess who that is. Denzel Washington.
No, so close though.
Okay.
Margaret Atwood.
Okay, yeah, very similar.
Yes. So Margaret Atwood, she has a series of 23 classes on Masterclass.
23 classes.
23 classes. And I only had time, honestly, to watch two of them. But one of the ones that I watched was about how she chose to do to write The Handmaid's Tale in first person, where she wrote Alias Grace from multiple points of view.
Wow.
And so it was so interesting to listen to her talk about like the feeling that she wanted the book to have and why a story should be told from this perspective or that one. Anyway, even though I'm a writer and I teach writing, I think this stuff would be fascinating even to people who just read the book. It was so great.
Yeah, I mean, Masterclass is for you. If you're like me, a bit of a prima donna, and you're like, I want to learn something, but I only want to learn from the best, you go to Masterclass. You can learn to think like a boss with Martha Stewart. You can learn to shoot three-pointers with Steph Curry. Like, if you imagine the person who's best at the thing you want to learn, they are probably already on Masterclass teaching how to do it.
That is accurate. And plus, every new membership comes with a 30-day money-back guarantee. So, like, zero risk here. If you are a lifelong learner, and we certainly hope you are,
if you're a lifelong learner, why are you listening to this show? Instead, head over to Masterclass for an additional 15% off an annual membership at masterclass.com/spilledmilk15.
Get 15% off right now at masterclass.com/spilledmilk15.
That's masterclass.com/spilledmilk15.
I realize now what an idiot I am to be like, oh, so I don't know how to take different flavors and imagine putting them in something else. Oh my God.
No, I know what you mean, but then like making it into like a spread to spread on something kind of, right? Or like drizzle. Yeah.
I think that I would love to, I'm kind of amazed you didn't include kimchi in yours or like.
Oh yeah. Like, I made a like really good kimchi fried rice the other night.
Juice from kimchi.
Yeah. I feel so like that would definitely be kimchi juice in there.
That would play really well with your peanut butter and I think with your citric acid.
Yep. Plays well with peanut butter. That's what I always said on my report cards.
Yeah. Okay. All right, Matthew, let's move on. So can you just tell me again what's in this stuff? Just recap it one more time.
Okay. So like most bottled sauces, it's mostly sugar and vinegar. And then in addition to that, onions, anchovies, garlic, tamarind, natural flavorings, chili pepper extract.
Okay.
And in England, the only difference between the American recipe and the British recipe is the British recipe has malt vinegar instead of white vinegar.
Mm, that seems like a good idea.
It sounds good, right?
Yeah. So wait a minute. Okay. So you went to the store and you bought like generic store brand Worcestershire sauce.
Yeah.
How is it that could be different from Lee and Perry? I mean,
it didn't have fish in it for one thing. It didn't have fish or tamarind. It was just sort of like sweet and sour sauce, basically.
So what is Worcestershire sauce? Can you divorce it from Lee and Perrins?
That's a good question. Let's talk about that. So Lee and Perrins puts Worcestershire sauce on the market in 1837. And in 1876, the High Court ruled that Lee and Perrins did not have exclusive rights to the term Worcestershire, and it went into the public domain and has been a generic term ever since. Hmm. And as a result of that, not only can you get crappy store brand Worcestershire sauce, but there are a variety of related sauces and sometimes really tangentially related sauces around the world that are called Worcestershire sauce. And for example, in Japan, Worcestershire sauce is something a lot more like tonkatsu sauce. So like thick and fruity. Lee and Perrins, there are regional variations around the world. And like, there'll be like a local brand that's very popular that may be more or much less like Lee and Perrins. Lee and Perrins itself is super popular in El Salvador, where it appears on most restaurant tables. It's called salsa perrins.
Okay.
And per capita consumption, at least as of the 90s, was the world's highest. Half a bottle per person per year.
Wow. And so so there it would be like just shaken onto ready-to-eat food. Have you ever done that with Worcestershire?
I haven't done that. And I don't even know if I've ever tasted it straight. And so I'm pouring a little into a dish, and I'm going to try some right now. You want to do it?
Okay. Yeah. Hang on just a sec. I mean, I feel like mine is a whole other experiment because my Worcestershire sauce expired 12 years ago.
Was it in the basement?
It was in my fridge.
Okay. I bet like whether you refrigerate your Worcestershire sauce is something that like if you did a poll, an online poll, people would have strong opinions on. I don't think it needs to be refrigerated. But if you're going to keep it.
I guess I've always refrigerated it because my parents did. But now that you mention it, doesn't say refrigerate anywhere on it.
No, and it's got a ton of salt.
Mm-hmm. And yet it still says 80% less sodium than soy sauce.
Oh, I didn't notice that.
Well, that's what my bottle says.
So then my bottle, as we've determined, is it still says 80% less sodium than soy sauce. Interesting.
And you're supposed to shake the bottle. Did you do that?
I did not. Hey, look, I don't play by the rules of some dead English guys. I make my own rules. And you don't play by the rules of expiration dates. We're rebels. We are like hardcore rebels. How is it?
You know, I'd like it to be saltier, actually.
Yeah, I could see that. I think mine is very tasty.
It's very tangy. It had a moment of spiciness to it that then passed. And now the spiciness is gone. And I'm left with this sort of residual, fruity, vinegary flavor. Mm-hmm. I can totally get how this could be like a cousin to tonkatsu sauce.
Okay. You know what this is very similar to in flavor and kind of viscosity is Chinese black vinegar.
Yeah.
Right?
Yeah.
It's got that fruitiness and acidity. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And a touch of funk.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. No, and also like just tasting it reminds me a lot of eating Chex Mix because it is really a distinct flavor of Chex Mix.
Yeah, yeah. Totally. So what do you do with this now? Clearly, I'm not doing very much with it, given that I still have this ancient bottle. Do you think I should go put this bottle in my basement?
I think you should go put it in your basement and come back to it. We'll do another Worcestershire episode in a couple years or 18 months. Is that how long they've been? Yeah. And we'll see if it's matured.
Great.
We'll see if we've matured. Not likely.
No.
I do want to talk about like what to do with Worcestershire, but also like I learned some more information about Lee and Perrins and competing sauces. So first of all, in England, Lee and Perrins is literally made in like right in the middle of the city of Worcester. Where is the city of Worcester in England? I don't know. Somewhere in the countryside, maybe the Lake District. Maybe it's in the Lake District.
I love that. And so they put Shire on the end.
Well, I think the Shire is like the county, and Worcester is like the county seat.
I thought the Shire was where the hobbits live.
It is, and they work, like a lot of hobbits are employed at the Worcestershire sauce factory. Lee and Perrin were actually hobbits. I forgot to mention that in the corporate history. The American version is made in Pittsburgh. Does your bottle say that it's from Pittsburgh?
Mine says Fairlawn, New Jersey.
Oh, interesting. So mine says Pittsburgh, Pennsylvania. Hmm. So maybe they have like a network of factories, or maybe their factory has moved. I don't know. Mm-hmm. The American one comes with the paper-wrapped bottle, which the English one does not. I think the paper-wrapped bottle is a great marketing innovation. I'm surprised we don't see more paper-wrapped bottles because it is, when you see it on the shelf, it's like, I want one of those.
The only thing I can think of, it feels very like apothecary.
Yes.
Like branding.
That's what they were. They were apothecaries. They probably helped out Romeo and Juliet once upon a time.
Probably. No, I think about different types of bitters often come wrapped in paper.
Yes.
And those also come in these kind of like plain brown bottles with sort of off-white packaging. Underberg comes wrapped in paper, right? Doesn't it?
What is Underberg?
It's an herbal digestive.
Oh, okay.
It's a digestive bitter made in Germany. But yeah,
that makes sense based on the name.
Yeah. So I guess all these things that are sort of maybe that like have kind of a history in the apothecary world.
Yes.
Old school chemistry world maybe come wrapped in.
Can we join
paper.
The apothecary world?
Yeah, let's do.
I mean, I guess that was like sort of like a Williamsburg-y thing to say.
Is it like an island I can hop to in Animal Crossing or?
Oh, are you playing Animal Crossing?
June is playing Animal Crossing and has been teaching me how.
Oh, I want to know your world because, like, I've been hearing like everybody on every podcast I listen to has been playing Animal Crossing. I don't have a Switch,
so
I would consider getting one if I need to get on these islands.
Brandon bought June a Switch, and it comes over to our house sometimes mm-hmm. when she comes to our house. And I have to say, I really enjoy it. I still don't really get it. I mean, it's very satisfying. I crafted my own fishing pole recently.
Nice.
In Animal Crossing. I haven't yet gotten to take it for a spin and actually catch any fish. But I can see how I could spend hours roaming around on this island shaking trees and getting tree branches.
I thought you were going to say shaking trees and getting fruit, but you just shake the trees and like get tree branches for making...
Well, if you go shake a tree that doesn't have any visible fruit in it, sometimes just leaves will fall out. Sometimes a tree branch falls out. You should pick that up. And sometimes a coin okay. falls out. And you should definitely pick that up.
Oh, that's useful. The coins are bells? Are they bells?
I think they're bells.
Yes.
I'm very new to this. But anyway, June just had a house built in Animal Crossing.
Yeah.
And it seems that my family is just enacting in microcosm what we've been doing in real life for the past few years, which is that we're all stuck on the same island. It's uh-huh. called Dino Lancy. and if I walk a few blocks, there's my ex-husband's tent. And here's our kid's house. And my new spouse also has a tent on Dino Lancy.
Oh, you're going to have to just like turn June's Animal Crossing world directly over to her therapist, right?
Pretty much. Anyway, and there's like a dog that walks around with a net and his name is Mac. And it's just like my real life.
When you say a dog that walks around with a net, what does that mean?
Or maybe it's not a net. His name is not. I can't remember if his name is Mac. But anyway, it's a dog that walks around and he's holding something and I can't remember right now. But anyway, everybody, this is another one of those situations where all of our listeners are going to be screaming at their phones while they listen.
Yeah, but
they probably have the same dog on their island.
But this is like a pop culture phenomenon that you know way more about than I do.
It's shocking, isn't
it? So that's good. You know what I realized as you were talking? Isn't it funny how a fishing pole and a fish stick seem like they would be the same thing but are totally different things?
Yeah, it's true. It's true.
One more fact. Okay, first of all, Lee and Perrin's Worcestershire sauce is gluten-free. I learned that. There is a competing sauce in the UK called Henderson's Relish, which is the most English thing I have ever heard.
It sounds delightful.
It's not a relish in the sense of like a chunky condiment. It is a bottled sauce called Henderson's Relish.
I think that someday there's going to be a horse in the Kentucky Derby named Henderson's Relish.
I think you're absolutely right.
Doesn't it also sound like a horse's name?
It does, yes.
Like a racehorse's name.
Oh, yeah.
And Henderson's Relish, buy ahead!
Yes, I bet on Henderson's Relish to win place or show.
Great. Okay. All right. Nice
all
job
right.
with win place
are,
or show.
We are horse experts.
And Animal Crossing experts. It's all related, yeah. really.
You know more about horses than I do, more about Animal Crossing. Like, I feel like this is
my episode. This is my
this
moment
is your episode,
to shine.
And this is my moment to learn.
Yes.
Okay, things you can do with Worcestershire sauce. So, like I said, it's an umami source. It goes in Bloody Marys very commonly.
I never make those.
We made them for the Bloody Mary episode. That's the only time I've ever made one. It was okay.
It was delicious. Why don't I keep doing that?
I don't know. Okay. It is a very common ingredient in Caesar salad dressing. Mm-hmm. Where it's like taking the place of where you might use like anchovy paste or just canned anchovies.
Okay.
You can spike your meatloaf or burgers or anything, beef spheres. wow, I almost called them something weird. It can go in any super stew. I read a bunch of things saying that it's really good in lentil soup, which I'm sure is true.
Oh, yeah. God, that sounds great.
And it's a common ingredient in cocktail sauce, which we talked about a lot
yes.
on the shrimp cocktail episode.
Oh, this is all making so much sense to me.
Now, having said that, am I going to be using it frequently for things other than barbecue sauce? Probably not, okay. But it was nice to learn about it.
Well, we should definitely link to Kenji Lopez Alt's homemade barbecue sauce.
Yep. We'll link to Lee and Perrin's corporate history,
okay,
which is like one page on their website.
Okay.
I wanted so much more. Like, I feel like if someone is going to go, like, going to take the time to go to your corporate, like, or our story page on your corporate website, they don't want, like, the 30,000 feet version of your story. Like, they are clearly some kind of big nerd, and they want, like, all the details. Sometimes corporate sites deliver, and, like, mm-hmm. you find out, like, who was on the board of directors in 1947, which is what I want to know. But often, like, the Lee and Perrin's one, it was disappointingly shallow, like this shallow dish of Worcestershire sauce that I poured.
Maybe we should pitch ourselves as copywriters to them. They're going to love us. They're going to send us so much free Worcestershire sauce. I can't wait.
They're going to really love the part where at the end we say, are we going to be using Worcestershire sauce very much? No, probably not.
Okay. All right. Well, Matthew, we should remind everybody that we still have a great new podcast out there that's free for listening. It's called Dire Desires.
It's a podcast about life lessons from classic erotic thrillers, and you can subscribe and listen right now, diredesirespodcast.com or wherever you get your podcasts.
It features not only me and Matthew, but also host Abby. I mean, mm-hmm. who used to be, well, who on this show is producer Abby. I know it's really tricky.
It's very complicated.
A new host producer Abby title. Anyway, we should also thank Abby. Thank you, Abby Circatella, for producing this episode as well as every episode of Spilled Milk.
You can find us online at spilledmilkpodcast.com, where we'll have those links to the barbecue sauce recipe and the Lee and Perrin's website. You can find us on Instagram at Spilled Milk Podcast and on Facebook at facebook.com/spilledmilkpodcast. Tell us what you do with Worcestershire sauce. What's your fantasy involving Dennis Quaid and Mrs. Frizzle?
Yeah. Let us know.
If you want any classic characters.
If you want to write a whole script, we will consider acting it out for you.
Oh, that's an interesting idea. Someone is going to send us just like the most depraved script and we will act it out for them.
Yeah. I mean, we might not act it out and share it with you guys, but we'll act it out here in my closet and Matthew's dining room.
Uh-huh.
Yeah.
Right. Okay. I'm looking forward to that. So start sharpening your script pencils, everyone.
Okay.
Start booting up final draft.
Great. All right. Well, thank you for listening to Spilled Milk. You know, we should come wrapped in a cool paper bottle.
We should. I was going to say that.
I mean, a paper wrapped bottle. We should come wrapped in paper.
We should come wrapped in paper. I'm Matthew Hester Burton.
I'm Molly Weisenberg.
Molly's in the hallway hunting for breakfast indeed. What if it was missing and you had to solve the greatest mystery of your life?
Oh, my breakfast? What if my breakfast was missing?
Exactly.
Life is a highway, and on it there will be many chicken sandwiches. But there's only one McCrispy, so go ahead and hit the turn signal if you know about this juicy gem of a detour.